Nate Monroe. Let's begin with you. The Times Union reporting this today. Mayor Alvin Brown has gone on record saying he's against this. Florida Senator Bill Nelson speaking out against it. Senator Marco Rubio, no statement yet. This could have far-reaching implications for our area.
Sure. I mean, and, you know, as I said in the story, I mean, this sort of thing is a long-term process. You know, we're talking about drilling that's a decade or more away. But, you know, one thing that strikes me about Florida, you know, I'm from South Louisiana, and the attitude about oil is so much different there than it is in Florida. You know, I remember after the oil spill, politicians in Louisiana decrying the moratorium, saying, you know, how is it that we could stop drilling right now when, you know, Florida's reaction was completely different. And that always strikes me when stories like this happen.
Yeah. After the 2010 Gulf oil spill, the Gulf Coast of Florida, John Burr, the businesses along that part of the state were absolutely devastated. They still haven't quite recovered.
No, they haven't. But, you know, there's a difference here, and what they're talking about off of the coast of Florida is looking for oil.
Not necessarily drilling for it.
But I'll tell you, if they find it,
they're going to drill, sure.
It's going to be very difficult to stop the industry from drilling, yes.
Sure, right. Sure. People want access to that source of energy. Fred Matthews, this sets up an interesting battle between business interests in our area and environmental groups who kept this ban in place along the East Coast for decades.
It's kind of hard to not see the battle coming. I mean, you wouldn't. The pre-testing has been done. We know they do that to see if there's a possibility of that oil is down there. They wouldn't pre-test. Now that is done, and they've basically gotten the agreement of the federal government to allow them to do it, and it's going to happen. The testing is going to take place. The only problem, and this is the American Petroleum Institute, folks. I mean, that's their job, to look for oil. The rest of it is still a question of, is this the way America wants to go in the future? Do we want to continue to pursue carbon emissions that are going to pollute the planet? And apparently the administration, by giving them the okay to do this, says, oh, well, you know, we're going to let them go. We're going to let them do it.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment. What are your thoughts about the new decision from the federal government allowing for oil exploration off our coast? It could lead to drilling off the Florida coast. Give us a call. Off the East Florida coast, 549-2937 is the number to join the show. And Eric Smith, this is the classic battle between jobs that are promised and concerns about the environment. The American Petroleum Institute saying they want to test from Delaware Bay all the way down to Cape Canaveral. That includes us. They're promising jobs for the entire East Coast. But as Fred said, drilling wouldn't be possible for at least a decade. Your thoughts?
Well, it's amazing to me that with all of the things that are happening to change all of the balance between natural gas and oil and wind power and so on, that they feel compelled to pursue this. I don't think that's what President Nixon had in mind when he created by executive order the Environmental Protection Agency. Didn't know that, did you? And just 2 days ago in the news, they're actually trying to rescue the coral in off the shores of Miami and Miami Beach in that beautiful area down there, because the dredging is destroying that coral. And yet the Corps of Engineers still says, well, we're doing nothing but protecting the environment. So I think it's of great concern, and I'm glad that the mayor, and especially longtime champion for no oil drilling, Senator Nelson, has come out against it again.
And it's worth noting, John and Nate, the Obama administration has gone on record as saying they're pursuing an all-of-the-above energy strategy, and that includes traditional sources of energy like oil and gas.
Well, you know, it seems to me we're somehow putting the cart before the horse here. I think it's very prudent from a national perspective to find out what we have. Just to say, oh my God, we can't even test to see if there might be, you know, a supply of oil or natural gas on the East Coast of the United States, and just put our head in the sand and pretend that, you know, we're going to get all our electricity from wind and solar. You know, that's not a smart strategy. The political debate can happen once we know whether it's actual, you know, feasible to go after whatever oil is out there.
Nate Monroe.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, this is definitely not the first time that Obama has announced some sort of decision that, you know, would run contrary to, like, what environmentalists would want. You know, at the same time, was it last month or the month before, you know, he announced these new EPA regulations that are going to really transform the way that electricity is delivered to us. I mean, that's going to affect us in Jacksonville in a very direct way. JEA is, you know, going to have to watch that. So you're right that in some way maybe it feels a bit schizophrenic because Obama is kind of all over the place here. But
yeah, on the one hand, he's tightening up regulations on power plants. He's making indications that he might vote down that Keystone pipeline, which environmentalists hate. On the other hand, Fred, he's saying go ahead and explore for more oil off the entire eastern seaboard.
Well, I mean, it is off the entire eastern seaboard, so it may not end up out of the part of Florida. It may not happen because of the politicians here who may be against it. We don't know where Senator Rubio stands yet, but it is he has had an all inclusive strategy to wean us off of any dependence on Middle Eastern oil, and it has worked. We have more gas than we've ever had before. We don't have to depend on it. We're producing more oil than the Middle East is producing, so we're pretty much there. And on the other hand, you really can't criticize this that much because it is a question of testing. This is a legitimate test that's going on. I know the opposition simply doesn't want any testing, none. Let's not have any looking for oil. We want to stop it. That simply is not practical. It's not going to work.
Eric Smith, do you agree?
To a certain extent, I do agree. We do need to know where our resources are. I would feel better if there was something that would forestall an automatic segue. Wow, we found oil just off the coast of Jacksonville. And they roll out the green light. But I'm with the people who said, we do need to explore. We need to know where our resources are in case of an even more widespread war or wars than we have now. We've got to protect the national interest in that fashion.
And lots of calls, meanwhile. What are your thoughts about the new announcement from the federal government allowing for offshore oil exploration, lifting a 30-year ban up and down the entire East Coast? This could pave the way for offshore oil drilling off our coast here in Northeast Florida. What are your thoughts about that? Lots of calls, 549-2937. Let's go to Les in Springfield. He starts us off. Hi, Les. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Love your show, Melissa.
Thank you.
Listen to it basically every day. I'm a middle school science teacher. And I had some of my students doing a project on oil and oil exploration, especially after the BP spill. And when you go to this certain website and show the actual locations of all recorded oil spills off the Gulf of Mexico, and I know one of your guests is a Louisiana native, and all of a sudden when that thing populates, it is huge. I mean, the screen is filled with the number of actual spills that are recorded but not reported. So what I suggest to everyone is to do some research, follow the money trail, and realize that we don't want that. I'm a Florida native. We don't want that off the coast of Florida. Hello. And just follow the money trail and see what's really going on. And when you learn, you wake up. So I want to leave that to you and go with the guests. And again, love your show. Thanks.
Thank you.
So
that's Les in Springfield. John Burr, what do you think?
I say that's part of the political discussion that will happen if and when it is oil in a producible quantities is found off the coast of Florida. To shut down everything based on that right now with very little information, I just don't think it's a good move.
What about the other trend pushing against this, Fred and Nate? Nate, you mentioned in Louisiana, there's really no debate about whether to drill. In Florida, which is so dependent on our beautiful beaches, it's a very different conversation. Our tourism industry will squeal very loudly at the thought of, pieces of oil washing up on our beautiful Florida shores.
Sure. Like you said, I mean, a lot of the at least the local political momentum is certainly very much against it. You know, people are aware that, you know, Louisiana's, you know, the dirty side of the Gulf, and this is, you know, the panhandle is the clean side. You know, who wins out? You know, do oil companies, you know, defeat, you know, a big tourism industry here? You know, I don't know. I don't know how that plays out.
Huh. Let's go to Carolyn in San Jose. Carolyn, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm the president of Duval Audubon Society, and we are very much concerned about any kind of exploration or drilling off the coast of Florida, or actually the whole East Coast. It's such an important habitat, so environmentally sensitive, and this whole oil drilling business is just an accident waiting to happen.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. Thanks for the call. Fred.
Any prevention that we would do, any fight against this, even the testing or if it's inevitable that we'll have drilling after that, would have to include an agreement with Georgia. Because if they have oil wells that are being drilled there and we get a spill, it's going to hit our beaches, just like it did in Alabama, Mississippi, and eventually the Florida Panhandle. So whatever we do here in Florida, we've got to have an agreement upstate. Now, the politicians in Georgia may not be so inclined. They tend to be more conservative than the politicians here in the state of Florida. Tourism is not as big a deal for them as it is for us down here in Florida. So we have to have that agreement with them to do it. Otherwise, it's just going to be for naught. Because, you know, it's there. But I think we have to look at this realistically, folks. I mean, it, whether we are against it or for it, on a nationwide strategy, do we want to make sure we have all of the options before us and the safety mechanisms in place? Or we just want to be against it just because we can't be against it?
And if you're just joining the show, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we discuss all the biggest stories of the week with our Roundtable Week in Review. Lots of calls. And the number to join the program, 549-2937. That oil story is important, but we do want to move on and discuss the other biggest headlines of the week. Fred, you just mentioned our friends to the north, politicians in Georgia. We want Georgia callers right now as we discuss that Republican Senate primary just over the border. David Perdue, the former Dollar General CEO and cousin of former Governor Sonny Perdue, beat Congressman Jack Kingston in this primary by a nose. Now, Perdue's win sets the stage for a competitive general election in Georgia against the daughter of former Georgia Democratic Senator Sam Nunn. Nunn registered a narrow lead over Perdue when the Atlanta Journal-Constitution polled Georgians a few months ago. It's worth reporting that Democrats have not won a statewide race in Georgia since 2000. So can Democrat Michelle Nunn prevail in the November general election against Republican David Perdue? And the larger question, of course, people that are watching this at the national level, the Republican Party very much wants to take back the U.S. Senate this fall. They only need to take back 5 or 6 seats to do it. What that means for the future balance of power in Washington is being closely watched by many. We want your calls right now about Georgia politics. Give us a call. Let us know who you like for the November election in that Senate seat in Georgia and your thoughts about the midterms. The number to join is 549-2937. And John Burr, not only is the former name Nunn coming back in Georgia, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, Jason Carter, is, of course, the grandson of President Jimmy Carter. Democrats in Georgia like these candidates, but at the same time, Republicans feel confident about their chances. What's happening up in Georgia politically is really interesting right now.
It is. And, you know, I think this race in Georgia might revolve more around the personalities than the political parties, just because they are both so well known, and those names are so well known. It may not be strictly a Republican versus Democrat vote. It may be more of, I like this person more than I like that person. That's just a hunch.
You think so?
But it's a hunch. But I'd like to hear what Eric has to say. He's pretty attuned to politics.
Eric, what are your thoughts?
I was last century, but I've got to confess, I didn't follow this Purdue Nun race very well. I was so focused on the Jacksonville mayoral contest. But the Nun name is very, very, very popular, as is, I think, to some extent, Purdue and certainly Carter. But I think in this kind of an environment, I hate to play the woman card, but I think a woman named Nun, with her father's contacts still very fresh, I think she's going to be a very formidable candidate. If I had to bet the house.
Why do you think her gender plays a role? Just because female voters who might vote for her on both sides of the aisle?
You know, men have controlled, we have controlled most everything for so long. I think women tend to bring a great energy, candor, frankness. I think, generally speaking, they can be more trustworthy. Look at the council. Look at our own city council. Denise Lee, Lori Boyer, tough as bulldogs, but they're sensitive to people's needs. They get things done. They're trusted.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment, especially if you're up in Georgia listening. Let us know your thoughts about the Senate primary in your state, 549-2937. Nate, Fred, if Republicans in D.C. take back the Senate, that gives them quite a bit of leverage over the Obama administration, which, of course, they are outraged over a number of moves the administration has made. The likelihood of the House Republicans drawing up articles of impeachment, should the Senate go back into GOP hands, becomes much more likely.
Well, I think that would be fun. We haven't had an impeachment fight in, what,
fun.
12 years. I mean, for those of us who watch it, it's going to be fun. I mean, it's not going to make that much of an impact upon the Obama administration once they get in. I mean, how long does it take? It takes, at least 9 months to get the thing drawn up out of the House. They got to debate it, send it to the Senate. We're looking at this. We're doing it 2016 before they'll be able to get a vote on it. And so what? The president will be walking out of
office. Really think that? You really think that?
Well, I mean, there is a school of thought that does want to do this impeachment thing. The same people who did want to fight the Bertha fight. But the timetable doesn't work in their favor for getting it done before the president will leave office. What is of more interest to them is, yes, being in control of the Senate and the House, and this race in Georgia is important to that. Now, the problem that the Democrats have in Georgia with Michelle Nunes is the same problem you look at anyplace else in the South, and that's demographics. Outside of the main population areas, Atlanta, possibly Albany, and possibly Savannah, you don't have great Democratic voting conclaves. And they have continuously elected Republican governors in Georgia, just like we did here in Florida, for the last decade. Now, this is what could possibly happen here with the Jason Carter and Nathan Deal fight up there could change the demographic. But that's mainly because Nathan Deal has been such a bad governor. You almost want him out. Anybody but him at this point. And quite frankly, those of us who see the TV commercials running out, I thought I was going to be able to vote for these folks until I looked at the thing and saw that no, this is all Georgia races.
That's right. They advertise down here too. Nate Monroe.
to Eric's point earlier, I do think that, you know, people who are interested in politics, and obviously people that live in Georgia, probably paid quite a bit of attention to this. But, you know, this, it is worth noting that, you know, so Purdue beats this veteran politician in Jack Kingston. This is not like what happened with Eric Cantor recently. This, you know, Purdue is not a Tea Party guy. And I think that adds, that makes this race, you know, interesting in a way, because this isn't going to be a sort of a Democrat against, you know, a hardcore Tea Party candidate. And you know, that's something we haven't, you know, in light of the Eric Cantor defeat sort of recently. I mean, that's been something, it's been a big part of the political conversation.
Because what's going to happen is that Michelle Nunn is going to end up running for or against President Obama. I mean, we see that every local race that we saw out of Georgia over the last few months has been, this guy voted for Obamacare. We're going to go back and we're going to repeal Obamacare. Every one of the Republican candidates have that as part of their mantra. And that's what Michelle Nunn is going to face. So she's going to be in a position of having to do what Andrew Crenshaw is doing now, is saying that he is against Obamacare and his commercials that he's running down here, our local congressman. He's against Obamacare, and he'll vote to repeal it if ever the vote comes up. Now, he's not going to lead the vote, but he'll vote to appeal it. And these folks who are going to Congress are going to be, remember now, they're going to be junior congressmen. Junior, they're not going to have leadership positions, but that won't matter with the electorate. They're going to, the Republicans are going to run against Obamacare. They're going to paint Michelle Nunn with leading the Obama, with being supportive of the president, and she's got to either defend that position or she's got to deny Obama in her commercials that she runs.
And the number to join is 549-2937. It's worth noting that the gubernatorial candidate, Georgia State Senator Jason Carter, he's, of course, Jimmy Carter's grandson. He's got a cousin. It's Carter's other grandson, James Carter. He's the guy who unearthed Mitt Romney's infamous 47% video that directly impacted the Romney campaign in 2012. I think that will come up again in this race, and people and voters that didn't like that Romney was Romney's campaign was harmed in that way, that might also play a part. Because, as you said, Fred, Georgia is still very much a red state.
Very true.
All right, now another big event will rock downtown Jacksonville this weekend. Without water taxis, two pontoon boats that will enable the city to resume that service are going through the Coast Guard's weeks-long certification process, but none of that's going to be done in time for this huge Saturday event at Everbank Field when the Jaguars and Shad Khan unveil the stadium's gigantic new scoreboards, the biggest in the league. There's going to be a soccer-friendly and a Carrie Underwood concert. Transportation should be fine, but the water taxi scuffle still not resolved. Nate Monroe, this doesn't seem like a huge deal, but it's certainly one that City Hall wishes that they could have resolved by this weekend.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's the kind of problem that, you know, Alvin Brown's opponents are going to seize on time and again as, you know, to them proof that, you know, the mayor and his staff, you know, just have showed repeated sort of incompetence or what have you. It's got, I would imagine it has just been a huge headache for them. And they're probably very much excited to get this out of the way as soon as possible.
Eric Smith is a former city councilman. What are your thoughts about it?
I'd be asking the same kind of questions that many of the council members have asked. You know, what, there's a tendency to keep the city council, always has been, it's not just the Brown administration, on a need-to-know basis. There's something I found out earlier this week that I'm not allowed to talk about right now that is going to outrage the council if it doesn't get worked out. But
what do you mean you're not allowed to talk about it? Well, tell us all about it.
I promise somebody. I mean,
oh, okay.
It's not a scandal or anything. It's just unfortunate, but it's just my trick to get invited.
That's your trick to get invited back. Okay.
My trick to get invited,
or never get invited back.
you got to wonder how this happened at the last minute. Suddenly, two boats pop up, and how could you not know that the Coast Guard would take three forevers to get these boats examined and shuffle the papers and all that? And there, I had a Chinese investor that was interested in buying the boats and working out something with the city. I advised him, said, look, it's going to be too complicated. Harry Frisch is already in it, and he's a great fellow, but Harry is apparently all frustrated with this. And anybody that sees the RFP, and works the numbers, maybe saying, I better think twice about this because it just might not be economically. Am I right, Mr. Burr?
Well, I think you're dead on. You know, we got to step back and look at why the original vendor stepped out and didn't want to do it anymore. Obviously, he wasn't making any money on it. So, and if he wasn't making money on it, that means it's not that popular. So I think we need to kind of step back. And I know it's July, it's Jacksonville, there's not a lot going on, but this is like tempest in the teapot land.
It's one of those issues in which the mayor's staff has really not served him well. And unfortunately, the mayor is going to take all the heat for it because it is his staff. They really should have done their work on this thing before they let it out. I mean, anything above $20,000, you got to know, you got to send it back past the council. You can't sneak it around. You can't do this. And then you get your own general counsel going out the door. Cindy Lacordaire, who's already under heat from the council, tells you, don't do it, and you go ahead and do it anyway, and now you got this mess on your hands. We're not going to get the boats there. This is not something the city needs to be running. The city doesn't run taxi services, whether it's on the street or in the water. So this is just a mess here that they've created. Whether they knew about the paperwork or not, they shouldn't have done it in the first place. And unfortunately, I guess by the time the mayor realized it was too late, or he didn't put the brakes on it. So, it's just not going to happen the way it should happen.
I mean, when's the last time any of us rode the water taxi?
I've never ridden a water taxi.
Well, exactly. So there you go. I mean,
but, everyone rides the Skyway or buses. You could make the argument, though, that
they're all public service. Those are all publicly subsidized, and we're going to end up subsidizing the water taxis. Because nobody rides them.
Fred left out the city ethics officer becoming a super city council and a super general council, which I voted for the ethics bill years ago, and Carl's done a great job. But ethics officers aren't supposed to opine on everything, like the timeliness of council decisions and so on. But that's just my opinion.
Well, if the press goes to them, they got to opine. I mean, the press went to him. That's the only reason they opined. They didn't offer a written opinion here.
I love the word opine, meanwhile. That's a great word.
Fred, these attacks on the press are so unfortunate.
Okay.
Uncalled for.
So even though there will be no water taxis this weekend, the sports complex will be rocking with the soccer games, Carrie Underwood, the Sharks, the Suns, lots going on this weekend. Meanwhile, the Jacksonville-based financial services company EverBank announces today it has signed a 10-year extension to retain stadium naming rights with the Jaguars through the 2024 season. This is according to multiple reports, so you can look forward to seeing EverBank on the stadium for many years to come. And then also, speaking of the NFL, let's talk about Tim Tebow for just a moment. You can't knock his devotion to making it as an NFL quarterback. His off-season regimen is ongoing. As Tebow says, he really wants another chance to play. He's working with the throwing mechanics guru who has worked with Tom Brady and other standouts. He just bought a house here in Jacksonville. That made news as well. Nate Monroe, can Tim Tebow do it again?
We're a bit outside of my wheelhouse here. I graduated from LSU, and I like the Saints, so I have nothing to add but just very not productive things to say about him.
He should take the job with the Sharks and get seen and see if he can do it in a small arena, excite the crowd, bring somebody to Jacksonville. The Sharks would love it. Jacksonville would love it. You can pack that little arena. Right. That would be a better deal for him. He's simply not going to get a job in NFL until they see him again in work. They're not going to do it. I mean, Gus Bradley and those are throwing it down. Nobody is going to hire Tim Tebow. For better or for worse, I don't think it's fair, but they're not going to do it. The NFL have made up their mind. His deal is go with the Sharks or go with and get seen, make some money for Jacksonville. We'll all go, and it'll be a great time, and that will give him his next shot to the NFL.
I agree. I mean, he's yesterday's news right now in terms of being a player.
Yeah.
He either needs to go to the indoor league, or he needs to go to Canada, but he needs to get on the field and start showing people what he can do.
Yeah.
Spiro Agnew used to say it best, these nattering nabobs of negativity about my hero, Tim Tebow. I'm still trying to find any Tim Tebow jersey to buy, to wear. I love the guy. He embodies the American dream. The American dream is take something that you couldn't do it anywhere else but in America. So let him have at it. I selfishly would like to see him with the Sharks myself. You know, I'm still a one person that would love to see him with the Jaguars. But I think he is the kind of man that if he makes up his mind to do it, that a miracle could happen. And why not?
You never know.
Why not?